And so here's another one. Here's another fact for you. The European Union makes more money taxing American companies than they do off the, than they produce profits off of their industries.
Think about that.
So here's a, that's a perfect example of exactly what I'm talking about. And so now recycle those tax dollars into, oh, I don't know, the $4 trillion worth of your U.S. treasuries that they have on their central bank balance sheets as reserves that they then pull a VIG off of and then use that to lever up through the City of London and other places that are unregulated in order to then create, you know, these liquidity, these pools of hot money and this global pool of liquidity to then invest in carry trades here and carry trades and all this stuff. And all they're doing is sucking capital out of the global economy onto their balance sheets as opposed, well, everybody else has to work that much harder. It's part and parcel to the way they treat their own people. So why wouldn't they treat the rest of the world the exact same way?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly.
So now let's talk about the yen carry trade and the end of it and why, you know, this idea of what I laid out this morning and why would Besant, you know, want to help the Japanese? Well, this isn't particularly hard, right? Because, the key is the following. He sold euros to buy yen.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And he did so after the euro hit a high last week, after the central bank meetings from the Bank of Japan and the Federal Reserve. You know, the euro, when Kevin Warsh didn't raise interest rates, the euro went wee and the dollar went down. And of course, well, because previous to the meeting, everybody was hoarding dollars because they were expecting Warsh to raise. Too many people were expecting Warsh to raise. It was a bad bet in my mind. I never expected Warsh to raise. So I'm not surprised to watch the long dollar trade unwind when, you know, it was clear that Warsh wasn't going to raise interest rates. As a matter of fact, I still think Warsh wants to cut interest rates.
Yeah,
So now on the other side of that, and I was honestly surprised that Ueda at the Bank of Japan did not raise on Thursday night. But, you know, time moves quickly. I say that, and like they just raised in June. So really asking them to raise in July at the next meeting, knowing the Japanese, this was an unreasonable, yeah, in hindsight, right, that's an unreasonable call on my part. Fine.
Sure.
But September is definitely on the table. And if you look at the rate at which they've been raising interest rates, it's been accelerating. Like, you know, 6 months or a year from them ending yield curve control to another year before they go to 0.25, and then it's 8 months until they go to 0.5, and then it's 4 months until they go to 0.75, and then it's, you know, another 3 months until they go to 1%. So maybe that's, you know, so there's a kind of acceleration effect happening here with the Bank of Japan. So that makes sense because they need to do something about this. They need to entice Mrs. Watanabe to keep her money in Japan, and they get the Japanese corporates to unwind their higher yielding investments overseas where they've made taken their profits and invested them in U.S. treasuries or, you know, I don't know, Italian
stock,
debt,
whatever,
stocks, this, that, all this stuff, right? The AI trade, you can come up with 100 different places to put your money that's better than a Japanese 5-year or 2-year. You know, now the long end of the Japanese yield curve is becoming interesting with the 15-year trading above 4%, with the 10-year trading at nearly 3%, right? Yeah, but now there's a kink in the Japanese yield curve at 15 years that I uncovered on Sunday. And I was like, wow, I was talking to my patrons on Sunday about this. And I'm like, where did that come from? The rest of the Japanese yield curve looks normal, but someone has been aggressively selling the Japanese 15-year for a while now. Now, is that a particularly thick market? Meaning, is it a particularly deep market? No. How many Japanese 15 years could be out there? But somebody can move, could spend a very little money to move that rate, and then, you know, it's kind of like watching people bet on weird stuff on Polymarket and going, see, the Republicans are going to lose the midterms because some guy like dumped $5 million on a Senate Senate race in, you know, in Kentucky. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just dumb. So I'm supposed to take this at face value. Like, this is not some guy out there running a boiler room operation on Kalshi. Really? Okay.
Well, I laugh because my son and I will watch the polymarkets with this kind of stuff. And these are the shenanigans that you see. But anyways, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. As far as I'm concerned, I've been saying it for a while now. I think Polymarket is just a new poll. It's just a new polling. Everybody knows the polls are nonsense. I got into it with Rudy Havenstein the other day about, you know, he posted some poll about, you know, Trump losing the midterms, and I'm like, you know, some Quinnipiac poll, and he's like, I'm sure that I don't know, the Shah had better numbers in 1953, and I'm like, I'm sure I'm sure Quinnipiac, you know, does still only polls Democrats, like, I know people who used to work there, and they're like, yeah, we used to just throw, they used, I could watch my coworkers throwing Republican responses in the toilet and then reporting the numbers, like, you know, Quinnipiac is as dirty as the day is long, and when it comes to the
solar, people still don't get all that. I mean, that's just beyond me. But anyways, go ahead.
Mm. So I know, because we're kind of off target here, but it is kind of important. So what we should look at is the yen carry trade. The current financial system as we exist within it today is built off of the yen carry trade. It's built off of that massive industrial base that was built in Japan and then levered up into the future. But the Japanese can't run that anymore. Everybody knows it. The math doesn't support it. So what do they got to do? Now, there's two things I want to remind everybody about before we go any further. One is that whenever people are wanting to gaslight you, they only talk about the debt. They never talk about the assets.
Yeah.
Never. I've been screaming about this for years. Every podcast that I go on, we start talking about the U.S. debt. I'm like, really? Have you looked at the amount of assets on the U.S.'s balance sheet?
Yep.
As a country. Well, you know, by the way, Japan has a lot of assets.
Yeah. They've
got a lot of really good assets. And the Europeans don't. China does. The Russians are trying to build some, but they're being attacked by the Europeans and sometimes the Americans and sometimes the Chinese and everybody else to try and keep them from growing. Mm-hmm. And that's what Russia-Ukraine is. It's just a big suck on potential Russian investment capital in their own country. That's the way you have to look at Ukraine. It's literally just a big... you know, source of friction, you know, that the Russian economy has to overcome. It's just a big static coefficient of friction, if you want to put it in physics terms, right? So whenever this starts, so now here's the fun part. So we have a variety of moving parts here. And I'm going to try and just focus on the Federal Reserve because everything else is part of the process. Because here's the big one, right? Again, like I said, Donald Trump is an idiot. This is the common parlance today. Donald Trump's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's trapped in Iran. He's got this, nothing going on. Meanwhile, the guy shoots a 70 over the weekend. And like, you know, you're not shooting a 70 when you're playing 18 holes of golf at 80 years old. And you believe you have any stress in your life. Like, really? Right. Okay. But regardless of that, salt that to taste. That's my interpretation of it. He doesn't act like a guy who's got a lot of stress on his head. He's like, he's on the ninth tee. I could even see him on the ninth tee on Saturday afternoon going, yeah, we're going to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age. Oh, yeah, that was a good putt. I left it a little short. Right? You know? Like, and then he goes right back to, like, tweets, you know, put this out on Truth Social. And then he goes and takes his drive on the 10th tee. Who's up here? Whose turn is it? Let's go. Right? This is Trump. Because he's Donald Trump. So the idea that Donald Trump doesn't understand bond markets, doesn't understand currency markets, please, man's built buildings all over the world. If you don't know how to manage your FX risk, you don't know how to build buildings around the world. Okay? Mm-hmm. Doesn't understand the geopolitics of the situation and has a Treasury Secretary who literally was the guy who, along with Stan Druckenmiller, who blew up the Bank of England, back in the early 90s, which then led to the the destruction of the Thatcher government, which then led to them the collapse of the, you know, the ERM, which then, you know, led to them becoming part of the European Union, right, under John Major, right? Okay, now, like, you don't think that guy has some skills?
Really? Right.
Okay. You really think that Druckenmiller and Bessent and these guys don't have any skills? Okay, right. You think they're all morons. You think you know more about them because you're some rando on Twitter. Or, hell, you're even even nominally a financial analyst like me who's supposed to know all this stuff and have opinions and be an expert. Like, I don't even know the structure of these trades. I wouldn't even begin to guess, but I know they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the thing. Why would he let it be known that he was buying yen, and then we see it occurring through the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that we sold euros to buy yen? That was your key. That was your tell. And now that's telling you who they've identified as the problem. So the euro-yen cross is really the whole shebang, right? Yeah. And every time that there's a sovereign debt crisis in Europe, I remember going back to Zero Hedge in 2015 and 2011 and other times, they would be screaming about the euro-yen cross when German debt was blowing up, or when Italian debt was blowing up, or Greek debt was blowing up. Remember all these things? Zero Hedge used to talk about the euro-yen cross all the time.
Right.
I wonder why. Well, because it was important. Because the carry trades were being unwound.
Mm-hmm.
So Donald Trump is an idiot. He is trapped. We've got $40 trillion with the debt. He's trapped in a war he can't win. Iran is going to bleed him out, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, the new guy at the Fed who wants to change the way we do monetary policy is trapped, and he's along for the ride. That is the current narrative that's out there.
Yeah, no, totally. That's what I...
Am I missing something?
No, that's it.
Okay.
You got
so
it.
So now, if that's the case, then if that's true, then why is Scott Bessent running the euro yen, you know, is selling euros and buying yen? Why isn't he selling dollars to buy yen?
Right. Because
maybe he's doing that too.
Maybe he's doing that too.
Or maybe he wants to force the euro down, which would then unwind carry trades even more, because the carry trades are all about, you know, positive cost of carry. So I got something for you. So this morning I got a thing from a friend of mine, couple of notes, and we were talking about this morning, and there was an article that a friend of mine sent me, and I didn't read the whole thing because it was behind the Substack paywall, but like the little free blurb ended with, oh, and the Europeans have been running a short yen, short U.S. Treasury trade at a positive carry this entire time. And I'm like, And then I sat down for a couple of hours and like worked out what I, you know, to understand what was happening. And, you know, I watched bond spreads. You know, right. I watched the U.S.-German spread, the French-Italian spread, the Italian-German spread, the U.S.-UK spread, generally in the 10-year market because that's the most liquid. I could look at the twos as well, but I use the tens because it's everybody's benchmark rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I finally went ahead and did the same thing and looked at the Japanese 10-year and looked at the cost of carry. And I went, oh, well, isn't it interesting that when you take the German-U.S. spread, which is positive 1.5 for Germany, and you take the American-Japanese spread at the 10-year level, and it's 1.8%, the Germans, this guy is correct. There's a 30 basis point positive cost to carry if you're just, you know, moving bunds versus U.S. Treasuries versus Japanese versus JGBs, there's 30 basis points in there to play with. And oh, by the way, if the euro moves too far, or the yen moves too far, or the dollar moves too far, guess what? That blows up.
Yeah.
But if the ECB and the BOE and the Bank of England and its many subsidiaries in BVI, the Bahamas, the Caymans, Canada, blah, 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 all the way across the board, and everybody, and the Swiss National Bank for the Bundesbank in Japan and Germany, which is a wholly owned subsidiary effectively of the Bundesbank in Germany. Like, when you do all this, and I don't have the whole picture in my head because no one does, because this data is not available, because half of it's going through shadow banks and half of it's going, you know, like, it's miserable. But we have motive, we have means, we have opportunity, we have attitude, we have all these things. All the bad guys point to all the data points point that the bad guys here, the main beneficiaries of the yen carry trade, is Europe.
Yeah.
So they're the ones you have to be watching. It's not the Chinese. They got a closed capital account. It's not the Russians. They don't have any capital. It's got to be the Europeans, right? I mean, here's one for you. Everybody talks about how many treasuries the Japanese have. Is anybody talking about how many the Bank of England has?
I was going to ask. No.
Bank of England, over $950 billion. It's doubled in the last 2 years.
Think about that.
Add in the Caymans, $400 billion. Add in Euroclear, Belgium, and Luxembourg. There's another $700 billion.
There you go.
Ireland, $400 billion. Canada, $350 billion.
Right.
Okay. The Bahamas, the Bermuda, $85 billion. BVI, the British Virgin Islands, another $100 billion. I've looked at the tick reports going back for the last 13 years, and I can tell you there's more hinky shit in the British Virgin Islands data than any other one on the planet.
Hey guys, Andy here. If you like this clip, please click in the show notes below to get the full interview or in the link in the discussion to get the full interview. We launched NRS World recently, and if you want to be a part of that community, please feel free to subscribe. It'll help us grow the channel to get you the best geopolitical guests that we can come up with and to help you stay informed. See you over there.